In a Fox News Sunday interview with Chris Wallace, President Trump made this comment when asked about public school education.
Now they want to change. 1492, Columbus discovered America. You know, we grew up, you grew up, we all did. That's what we learned. Now they want to make it the 1619 Project. Where did that come from? What does it represent? I don't even know.
It's so, slavery.
That's what they're saying, but they don't even know.
As many throughout the country are aware, the 1619 Project was a landmark issue in the New York Times Magazine, created by Nicole Hannah Jones, a reporter who covers racial justice for the Times. It refers to the year that the first enslaved people were brought to America and looks at how slavery continues to shape every aspect of American culture. When it was published last August, the magazine created a sensation, something I spoke with Hannah Jones about last September. We'll link you at hereandnow.org. In May, the 1619 Project won a Pulitzer Prize, and now Oprah Winfrey and Lionsgate have teamed up with Hannah Jones to bring the work to an even wider audience through multiple platforms. Last week, I spoke with Nicole Hannah Jones about the 1619 Project and how it continues to resonate during the current Black Lives Matter movement. So when we spoke last fall, you had just received a message that parents in New Jersey were taking your work to schools and demanding it be taught as part of the history curriculum. And now we're seeing entire curriculums and programming jump started because of your work. Do you see your work as one of the many defining moments that actually led us to this moment of reckoning?
I would not have the hubris to say that my work has led to this moment. I do think that the contribution the 1619 Project has made is that it certainly contributed to the lexicon around how we got here. I think it has allowed many Americans, particularly white Americans, to connect dots that they weren't connecting before, that this police violence and the inequality, that these aren't just unrelated incidents, but have a long and deep legacy that has to be confronted. And to the extent that has helped drive people out into the streets where maybe they would have sat home or on the sidelines before, or wouldn't have considered this to be a widespread long-term injustice that needs to be rectified, I can't say, but I'm certainly grateful for any role that the project might have played in that.
Mm-hmm. There are plans to make the 1619 Project into a TV show, documentary films, and books. And as I mentioned, it will become part of the curriculum for school districts in places like Chicago and Washington, D.C. and Buffalo, New York. This really speaks to the yearning that those parents in New Jersey and other places have been asking for. I want to ask you, though, about this larger push that has been underway for many, many years about textbooks that American children are learning from. The accuracy of those textbooks has been under scrutiny for some time. Do you see this work as moving forward in the effort to get a fuller view of American history?
Absolutely. We know that the way that history is taught in American schools is highly politicized, and it really has a nationalistic agenda. We're taught a history that speaks to American exceptionalism, to American progress. And so because of that, because our history curriculum in K-12 is largely trying to shape a shared national identity, what that has meant is it is necessarily downplayed the role of slavery, the genocide and theft of land from indigenous people, and all of the ways that America has not lived up to those ideals of exceptionalism. That has robbed Americans of the ability to properly assess their country and why things are like they are. And what the 1619 Project does is it offers a counter to that narrative and really tries to flesh that out and challenge that narrative in ways that I hope will lead people to question a lot of narratives. You know, there could be a 1619-like project about indigenous peoples. There are many different stories that really need to be told so that we could have a fuller version of the American project, and not just one that seeks to glorify us, but really one that seeks to challenge us.
Your most recent work, titled What is Owed, takes on the case for reparations for Black Americans. And in it, you cite a study that found that 71% of white Americans believe racial and ethnic discrimination is wrong. Just a few years ago, a little more than half of white Americans reported feeling that way. Do you believe there is an appetite for reparations?
I don't think that there is enough of appetite for it right now. I just was looking at some polling on this yesterday, and it showed amongst white Democrats, so, you know, the party that the vast majority of Black Americans vote for, that only about 30% of white Democrats support the idea of reparations. So clearly there's a lot of work to do on that. But at the same time, I think, again, it's related to the work of the 1619 Project. There's such a visceral response that many white Americans have to the idea of reparations. And I think that's really based on the fact that they actually have no understanding of this history. They have no understanding of the singularity of Black suffering, of the dragnet of laws and policies that have created the generational disadvantage that Black Americans face. And part of what I try to do with my piece on What Is Owed is really lay that history out and really show that there's nothing that Black Americans can do on our own to erase a 350-year system of racial segregation and economic exploitation. So no, we're not ready for that yet. But part of the work that I'm doing and that so many others are doing is trying to move that conversation forward so that we can maybe get to the point where we can be serious about addressing that. And we have seen movement. So mm-hmm. when you look at the fact that in the presidential or the primary debates, the Democratic primary debates, reparations was treated as a serious question by journalists and by people on that stage. 5 years ago, you wouldn't have seen that. When you look at H.R. 40, which is the bill to study the issue of reparations, it's been introduced every year for 30 years and has never made it out of committee. But a few years ago, it mm-hmm. had just 3 co-sponsors. Now it has well over 100 co-sponsors. So we are seeing some traction. And like many things when it comes to racial justice, it's a decades-long struggle, not a months or years-long struggle.
Mm-hmm. You're a Black journalist covering racial justice issues for The New York Times at a time when news organizations are being forced to reexamine racism in newsrooms and really the marginalization of Black journalists and the flawed narrative that somehow journalists of color should separate one's identity from reporting. Do you see newsrooms evolving from this? Because there is an argument that is still being had in many newsrooms about objectivity, neutrality, and where journalists of color sit in that paradigm.
Yeah, I think there is a reckoning happening right now. And of course, when you are a Black journalist, you've never bought into this idea that your identity is unrelated to your coverage. And we've known that that's not true for ourselves. And we've certainly known that that's not true for white journalists either. Of course, a white journalist's identity in a white-dominated society plays a role in how they cover stories, what they choose to cover, and what they don't. So it's always been interesting to me that our role as journalists is to explain the world to itself. And so here we are reporting on these national reckonings, racial reckonings happening across all of these different institutions and all of these different organizations and private companies. Yet we don't fully understand this ourselves, and we have not dealt mm-hmm. with these issues ourselves. So how can we explain to the world that which we don't fully understand? So I think this is a very interesting time that we're in where Black journalists are speaking out and are really pushing our news organizations in a public way, which is more unusual. And I hope that the only reckoning that comes out of this time of protest, that it also comes to our industry as well. If we see ourselves as really the linchpin, as the free press as a linchpin of democracy, then we have to democratize our own institutions.
Are you hopeful or optimistic?
No. No, I'm not. I think I'm realistic. And realistically, if you study history, then you know that massive transformation is very rare. and only comes after very sustained periods of resistance, and then it never fully transforms society and is often faced by a backlash and a retrenchment. So I'm already looking at how little news coverage the protests are getting, how little coverage we're seeing in media around if there's actually going to be police reforms or not. We're already seeing this narrative because of a rise in shootings that, you know, we can't defund police because look at all this violence in these communities. So I think that what we're fighting against is so deeply entrenched that it's hard to be hopeful that we're going to see that real necessary transformation. With that said, I am hopeful that people will keep fighting, because even if we don't think that we're going to see that, we are, I think, obligated to fight for it.
Nicole Hannah-Jones is the Pulitzer Prize-winning creator of the New York Times 1619 Project, which is being developed for multiple projects in conjunction with Oprah Winfrey and Lionsgate. Nicole Hannah-Jones, thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate you.